welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, February 26, 2021. A rebel group in Sudan wants to use national dialogue in addressing the root causes of conflict in the country.
We regard this as an ideal solution to find a true, comprehensive, just and genuine peace in Sudan.
And a South Sudanese American is using her conflict resolution skills to heal people affected by racial conflicts.
A South Sudanese and an Ethiopian woman, and particularly just taking a look at my culture, and learning the restorative justice method that the Nuer people have.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Sudan Liberation Movement has reiterated its commitment to restoring peace in the country this week. The group says it is working to initiate a national dialogue that will involve all political parties, traditional leaders, and civil society activists to address the root causes of some of the problems facing the country, including conflict. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
SLM spokesperson Mohamed Al-Nair argues the peace deal signed in Juba between Khartoum and armed opposition groups did not address the real problems in Sudan, and his movement has no intention of engaging in any negotiations with the current transitional government in Khartoum. Al-Nair says negotiations between the parties in Sudan will only lead to more political division should they disagree on any article stipulated in the peace agreement. He says Sudan's complicated political history has created imbalances in service delivery, leaving many communities feeling marginalized. Al-Nair says his movement believes the only way to address the various conflicts in Sudan is by engaging all communities in a genuine dialogue about the root causes of the country's problems.
We regard this as an ideal solution to find a true, comprehensive, just and genuine peace in Sudan. Sudan has a lot of complicated problems apart from causes of war. There are many regions and communities across the country that have serious issues and have not taken up arms against the government, and they should be represented in this conference.
The Darfur-based Sudan Liberation Movement, led by rebel leader Abdulwahid Muhammad Nur, and the SPLM North, led by General Abdulaziz Al-Hilu, refused to sign the Juba peace deal, arguing it does not address the root causes of Sudan's problems. Al-Nair says the transitional government has no legitimacy and does not represent the thousands of Sudanese who sacrificed their lives to overthrow long-term President Omar al-Bashir, who was ousted by the military. He says the real power belongs to the Sudanese revolutionaries.
We are talking about an initiative for a comprehensive peace in Sudan. It is not a negotiation between our movement and the government, but it is a dialogue among Sudanese. We expect all organizations such as armed movements, youth, women, traditional and religious leaders, refugees and internally displaced persons, and military institutions to participate.
In October last year, the Sudan Revolutionary Front, an umbrella organization of 9 Sudanese armed groups, signed a peace deal with the Sudanese transitional government in Juba. The agreement ended years of fighting in Darfur, Blue Nile, South Kordofan, and Eastern Sudan. Al-Nair says his group will only hold talks with the government if Khartoum agrees to involve all Sudanese communities in a wider national dialogue.
We will not engage in any negotiation with the current transitional government, be it in Khartoum, Juba, or anywhere else. We have expressed this clearly to the government a long time ago. What we need is a public dialogue among all Sudanese people.
Al-Nair denies the Sudanese Liberation Movement is under pressure from the international community to sign a peace deal soon, saying no one will force the SLM to engage in what he calls short-term peace.
Sudanese people are aware that there was a lot of international pressure placed on the SLM in the past to sign the Abuja Agreement in 2006 and Doha Agreement in 2011. But we are determined to continue the struggle for our people whom we have carried arms to fight for. We are not in a position to compromise, nor have we been under pressure, censorship, or intimidation.
Sudanese writer and political analyst Abdulmanem Himid, who has been following the conflict in Darfur for years, describes the situation in Darfur as fragile after nearly 20 years of conflict in the area. Himid believes any renewed conflict between the government and rebel groups in Darfur will complicate the situation, not only in Darfur, but across the entire Sudan.
The situation in Darfur is very complicated, and I think it is flammable because of existence of many armed forces there. And this situation will continue because it will depend on many issues. So the solution must be comprehensive for all sides, not just to sit with one part and ignore the other.
Himid says the transitional government should consider engaging holdout groups and winning their trust rather than freezing them out of power. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
Still on conflict matters, a South Sudanese American says she is using her knowledge acquired from college to address racial conflicts in her community in Philadelphia. Nyamal Biel Tudel, who is also an adjunct professor at Acadia University, says she's been training community leaders about restorative justice to prepare them for addressing conflicts related to race in the state of Pennsylvania. She says preventive diplomacy has proven successful in addressing race-related conflicts between various communities in Philadelphia. Nyamal is asking South Sudanese leaders to learn to address conflicts before it gets out of hand.
I'm doing a lot of training because everything that has happened racially here in the U.S. in the summer with George Floyd, and then here in Philadelphia in particular with Walter Wallace, life being taken away, it's we're getting a lot of requests from organizations wanting us to teach them, to train them on basic mediation and also restorative justice workshops. And also like how to facilitation, particularly for meetings, since we're in the virtual space. It's very hard for people to read body language and things of that nature. So that's what I'm doing in terms of the professional development and conducting those training stuff. So that's kind of what I'm doing professionally and privately as a normal citizen.
As a student of conflict, listening to you, it just keeps popping up in my mind when you talk about restorative justice. Why restorative justice?
That is a great question. So restorative justice is the concept that actually comes from the Native American, the indigenous people of this country in West Africa. And also, I believe, from the South Sudanese context, because everything that I learned, everything that I do, I always bring it back to being a South Sudanese and an Ethiopian woman, and particularly just taking a look at my culture, you know, and learning the restorative justice method that the Nuer people have used. Of course, I'm speaking from a Nuer context because I am a Nuer woman. And what I've learned historically from my late grandmother, how we used to actually use restorative justice when it comes to the conflicts that we've had, whether it's, you know, neighboring conflicts with different ethnic groups in South Sudan or within the same clan within South Sudan. So for me, restorative justice, it's something that I practice, and I think it's something that we really need to start practicing instead of this punitive justice system that we are in America, where we're just throwing away the person, right? Let's say the person steals the bread. Instead of finding the root cause of why this person stole the bread, we're just putting them away and wasting their potential to add to humanity, to add to the community, instead of realizing that, oh, wow, this person stole the bread because they didn't have the means, the need, and is it a bigger system problem?
When we talk about these issues here, the elephant in the room is racism. And when we take it a step further home in South Sudan, we're looking at tribalism, nepotism, impunity, and lack of justice. How do you see your skills helping the situation in South Sudan?
So my work is very, very, it's to say it's needed is an understatement, right? And particularly me being a woman, right? Let's also bring in the gender aspect of things. even prior to me getting into this academia space of really diving in and learning about conflict resolution and having it be a purpose for life, I've always thought about the reason preventative. Yesterday, I was actually talking about preventative measure. I'm also back in school as a student. I'm doing my PhD right now in conflict analysis and resolution because I really do want to find out more so that I can go back home and really utilize. We were talking about prevention, right? When it comes to the international systems, let alone within the South Sudan context, we do not do enough to prevent. We're always reacting to an aftermath. We're always going into intervention instead of prevention. So for me, currently, this work is needed not only from a community level, but also from the, you know, the governmental level as well. It has to be an ongoing conversation, an ongoing work. It just can't be, oh, hey, guess what? The warring parties are mediating in Addis while the social fabric of our community has been torn, has been stained, and everyday human beings are not living together.
Talking about preventive diplomacy, what would you suggest to leaders of your first country, South Sudan? You know, the country has been in crisis since 2013 until to date. Several peace agreements signed and they are not honored. What is your advice to leaders in South Sudan?
Honestly, a lot of us always go back and said, if we wanted to have done it right, we should have started in 2005 with preventative, because the only reason why we voted for 99.8 succession is because we had a common enemy and we did not address our own grievances with ourselves. The work should have done it that early of really building communities and having these restorative justice models, because in South Sudan, and particularly right after 2013, we don't have clear victims. We don't have clear perpetrators. Victims have become perpetrators. Perpetrators have become victims. So for us to also look at other models, I know that we were a lot of organization, a lot of individuals in our country were looking at the South African model of what they did during the apartheid. And I'm like, that model doesn't work for us. Rwanda had another model that they were doing, which is HEROC, healing and rebuilding our country, our communities. And that model fit us a little bit more because that was dealing with the interpersonal individuals of really bringing communities together. So for me, I would say, it's not too late yet for us, but if we're going to do it, if the leaders are going to focus on it, it has to be intentional and it has to be honest, and we can't have alternative motives.
Talk to me a little bit about your work in Philadelphia. What are the issues you handle and what are the issues that bring conflict in the community?
So I'm a volunteer facilitator for an organization called the Peace Center in Manhorn. And so I facilitate courageous dialogues. And by that is that we have a group of community members that come together. And this conflict is actually revolve around race. And in particular, there was a community that was going through the KKK, putting out flyers in the neighborhood. And of course, they happen to be Black families in that community. So for me, it's also understanding the history of slavery and the 400 years of what the descendants of the continent have gone through in this nation. And then how do you now have this courageous dialogue and having people see the humanity in each other, but also recognizing and making sure that this individual that is doing this, if anybody knows them, that accountability and justice is also served so that true healing and reconciliation could actually happen. It's a collaborative solution for everybody, that everybody needs is met and nobody else is left out.
U.S. is an inspirational story, and it reminds me of this common saying that where there is a will, there is a way. So talk to me a little bit about your family. Are you getting pressure from the family? Because it looks like you've spent a lot of years in educating yourself. And as a typical South Sudanese, I'm sure your relatives are now reminding you of settling down.
Oh, wait, am I getting pressure? Are you serious? Listen, I'm at a point where I don't even talk to family because I'm choosing peace. I don't talk to certain family member because I'm like, listen, I'm choosing a peace of mind. And the pressure is not even just from family now. It's from communities. I would get random, you know, when I'm interacting with community, they'd be like, Yaman, are you not married yet? I was just like, I'm like, people, really? Is marriage the ultimate goal for a woman? Are men my age getting this type of pressure? So the pressure in itself is becoming so overwhelming that what I'm adding to society is not being seen as a full contribution unless I have a family, which is a mindset that we need to change.
That's Nyamal Tudel, an adjunct professor at Acadia University in Philadelphia and a PhD student of conflict analysis and resolution at Nova Southeastern University. She spoke to me earlier today from Philadelphia. Numerous African countries are kicking off COVID-19 vaccination campaigns. Earlier this week, the COVAX program delivered its first shots to Ghana, but there is some mistrust over vaccine efficacy. In some countries, health ministers are among the first ones to take the shots. VOA Mariama Diallo reports on Senegal and Zimbabwe, two countries that began vaccinating their population using Sinovac, the Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccine.
Senegal received 200,000 doses of the Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccine last week and started vaccinating on Tuesday. Health Minister Abdoulaye Diouf Sarr was the first in line to mark what he called a historic day.
The history of Senegal.
Senegal is one of seven countries among the 54 countries of the African continent to start the vaccination against COVID-19.
Priorities include healthcare workers, people over 60, and those with underlying health conditions. SAR says in addition to the Chinese vaccine, the country is also looking at other possibilities to increase their stock.
The head of state is now finalizing talks with Russia to enable us to soon receive the Sputnik V. During the month of March, Senegal will also receive its first batch of the COVAX initiative.
Senegal is due to receive nearly 1.3 million vaccine doses through the World Health Organization-led COVAX initiative, which deployed a batch of 600,000 in Ghana this week as part of a first wave of coronavirus vaccines being sent to a number of low- and middle-income countries. In Zimbabwe, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, also the country's health minister, volunteered for the first Chinese-made vaccine as well. Amid reports of public mistrust over vaccine safety, Chiwenga said his ministry had done its homework.
My ministry conducted all scientific processes to ascertain the efficacy of Sinopharm vaccine, which was confirmed to be 79%.
Zimbabwe received 200,000 doses from the Sinopharm vaccine as a donation from the Chinese government. Another 600,000 doses purchased by Zimbabwe are expected to arrive early next week, according to government officials. Vaccine recipient Michael Chideme says he's relieved to have taken the shot, but
taking the jab does not mean I will not be able to, I will not get the disease if I don't practice caution. But I'll be extra cautious, but I'm happy I've taken the jab.
Zimbabwe, like many other African countries, initially recorded low coronavirus numbers in the first months of the pandemic, but subsequently saw cases go up. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
where do you get your health advice from?
Sometimes I get my health advice from my grandmother who is at home. When I'm sick that I can't control myself, she'll help.
I get my health advice from my friend, colleague. We live together. Well, those who know about, those who have been experienced more problems about health, they don't advise me through phone. We talk, we chat, discuss everything.
My dad, because my dad is a doctor.
I'd say I get my health advice from various places, the internet, my parents, because my mother is a nurse.
My health advice, I get it on the internet. If I need something on how to deal with obesity, I get it on the internet. Anything I need pertaining to health advice is on the internet.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Nabil Biagio is ready with listener comments we received this week. Over to you, Nabil.
Thanks, John. Here are the comments we received this week. Martin Manuel Ugol in Uganda writes, "As someone who believes in building South Sudan, I would like to encourage the newly appointed state advisors, ministers, commissioners, and members of independent commissions to work as one team. The main objective is serving the interests of common South Sudanese people who suffered during absence of state leadership. I congratulate the chosen few who made it to the final lists." Emma in Juba writes, "We need peace, not guns. Why does the government of South Sudan need guns? What are they going to use them for? Selling to civilians? See the destructions ongoing in the country. Let them disarm those who possess illegal arms." Samuel Remo in Yale writes, "Hi John Tanza. I was very excited to hear over VOA News that the counties of Kenya are writing constitutions. This is the best method, which I personally like, because a constitution is a contract between the government and the people." Zina Alfred Ramadan in Kenya, Nairobi writes, "Hello VOA. I appreciate VOA for the great work of updating some of the citizens of South Sudan who are outside the country on that which is happening in the country. Thanks a lot." Jacob Dior Machweng from Ural writes, "Good evening South Sudan in Focus. I'm writing about the formation of the revitalized transitional government of national unity, which has been happening for the last 1 week. I would like to congratulate all the parties to the agreement for making it at last. Better late than never." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Paniagor, Twitch East writes, "With the formation of state governments, I urge those appointed to address the challenges, especially the devastating flooding and the intercommunal conflicts which have displaced many from their homes across the country." Mate Martin Lawrence from WOW writes, "I warmly welcome the decision by President Salva Kiir to appoint state officials in order to stabilize security and help economic growth in the states and South Sudan in general." Mal Adaw Mal in Bortown writes, "Hello VOA. Pretending to be forming national and state governments clearly signals no political will amongst the signatories to the revitalized peace agreement. They are busy contemplating how to embezzle oil money. In real sense, we have no opposition parties. We only have one party with branches just like any other commercial bank in the country where money still goes to the headquarters. That's exactly the scenario in South Sudan." Joseph Awier in Juba writes, "Hi John Tanza. We South Sudanese are very excited about the program of South Sudan in Focus. The updates and connection of the community radios across the country with VOA means news is reaching the grassroots. Please keep up that strength and spirit, and we appeal to add more community radios in Warap, Twitch, and in Northern Bahr Ghazal in Awil counties." Mengistu Zama Bidi from Yambio writes, "President Salva Kiir has too much excessive powers. In fact, the powers are surplus. It's a total authoritarian regime. Those who have been following the peace agreement do not know that President Kiir is violating the peace agreement and the constitution. There is no provision in the peace agreement or the constitution that gives powers to the president to appoint and relieve county commissioners." Ilia Kayanga Allison writes, "As a citizen of this nation, I feel always concerned about this country, and my word to the government is that peace is the foundation for everything. Therefore, let us give chance to peace to dwell in the country, and let's stop hiding the truth in favor of our own self-defense. I love VOA, and big ups to all the staffs and the listeners." Marial Makur Mading from Goj, Chuaibet writes, "It is my pleasure to write to VOA to express what is going on in my area. The government of South Sudan has done very little on youth disarmament, especially Greater Lakes states where killings of people happen every day. The youth are fighting themselves during cattle raidings, revenge attacks, and rampant killings of innocent people." Gajek Wichar in Cairo, Egypt writes, "As a concerned son of Unity State, I'm very disappointed to the core about how Unity State government was formed, particularly the appointments of some county commissioners. It indicates that the little peace we have is at high risk since the most unwanted commissioners who are hated badly in their respective counties are brought back." Martin from Yale writes, "I'm sorry for the government of South Sudan for calling some of the social services international, yet they can't meet the international standard. They need to improve especially on communication sector and controlling the communications companies to track the bad acts and meet the international standard." Isaac Tang in Bantu Town writes, "Hello VOA. The South Sudan National Dialogue was welcomed but criticized by many, saying it will not be implemented. And that seems to be true, because where is it now as we speak? I'm asking the engineers of the National Dialogue. Thanks, John Tanzer and Nabil Biagio. God bless the VOA team." Thok Chuni Yok Kwai from Juba writes, "Hello VOA John Tanzer. The 22nd of February marks 1 year since the formation of the Government of National Unity, and some of the chapters are not yet implemented by the parties who signed the peace agreement in Khartoum. I thank VOA for creating a WhatsApp number for sharing our ideas every week." Duku Joseph David Biel writes, "I'm reporting the death of my father, Brigadier General David Biel Muon Chong, who died in Numuli Main Hospital after developing heart failures and kidney stone on February 21, 2021. I would like to inform relatives, in-laws, friends, people of Upper Nile State and South Sudan in general. His body would be laid to rest on the 24th of February 2021. Apparently, that date has already passed." Mading Malwal Alwong from Malakal Town expresses his frustration with the government of South Sudan. He writes, "The government failed to know the total number of all soldiers across the country, from the highest military ranks to the lower military ranks. This has given an opportunity to finance officers to rob salaries of soldiers." Mabor Alad Reng from Rumbek writes, "I appreciate John Tanza for honoring his time to work from home during this difficult time of coronavirus. This shows that you love your job. My reaction on the rise of the dollar rate in Sudan is that the Sudanese government should inject millions of dollars in the black market so that the dollar rate can drop down." Madal Chot Podkorbol from Lake States in Rumbek writes, "I appreciate your great work since I joined listening to VOA. My regards to Moki Edwin Kinzeka from Cameroon. He is a well-qualified reporter. I miss hearing his voice." Koniso Deng in Numuli writes, "I would like to send my humble regards to VOA officials, especially John Tanza and my favorite correspondent Waki Simon, for the great tasks you guys are doing." And our last commenter, Jok Shuti in Juba writes, "The government is not following the implementation of COVID-19 measures, which are violated by taxi drivers carrying passengers without social distancing that are required by the government."
Thanks, Nabil Biagio. Keep those comments coming. If you are listening to this program from Kapoita and Ming Kaman, send us your feedback on our WhatsApp number +1 202 630 8011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you in a dancing mood with the Freedom Boys singing in Acholi language. We've been listening to the Freedom Boys singing in Acholi language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. We are the Binya Ruwa Dokitwara.